You're listening to Breakaway Wealth, the show designed to help you build wealth faster, think bigger, and break out of the herd. Now, here's your host, Jim Oliver.
Welcome back, Breakaway Wealth. I'm your host, Jim Oliver, and with me today, Ken Freeman. Ken, welcome, buddy.
Hey, Jim. How's it going, man? Really excited to be here.
It's going great this morning. You know, it's finally starting to get back to warm here in Florida, and I know that everybody up north would think that I'm crazy, but I really prefer it when it's 92, 93 instead of when it's 60, you know?
Yeah, my dad's down in Florida, and he told me that he had to turn the heat on like it was some big revelation, and I was just like, what is this conversation we're having?
Well, I came out of my room the other morning, and it was 70 on the thermostat, and I thought, what did Riley do to the thermostat? And I looked, and it said it was set at 75. I mean, I set it at 75 because that's what seems cool to me now. And it's funny because it keeps edging up. It used to be 73. Now it's 75. But it's, you know, it's just funny how you acclimate to your environment. All right, let's jump in. Now, on the screen, it says Ken Freeman, CFA.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Ken, and tell us what CFA means.
Sure. So my name is Ken Freeman. I am a CFA charter holder. What that is through the CFA Institute. It's a designation in finance. There's three exams. They're 6 hours each. It's about 3,300 pages of material for each exam. They say you have to study at least 300 hours for each level. And it's pretty brutal, to be quite honest with you. And it's basically the gold standard in finance in terms of designations, especially if eventually you want to invest or run money for other people. But in addition to that, I'm a professor of finance and economics at Rutgers University. And I also have pretty extensive Wall Street experience. That's where I started my career working in investment banking. Then I ended up transitioning to working at a hedge fund. And since then, basically for more than the last decade, I've been training investment banking analysts and associates at some really big, well-known firms like the BlackRocks of the world. So these kids, when they graduate from college and their MBA programs, I'm the person that actually trains them in the skills that they need to do well in their job.
That's perfect. And what I really like, Ken, we've talked about this, but there's two different Wall Streets. Maybe there's more than two, right?
Absolutely.
But the one that you definitely, the one that I rail on constantly is the one that I'm going to call it the Edward Jones Wall Street.
Yep.
And I'm just going to pick on them because nobody with money would actually ever put their money with Edward Jones. Okay. Because what you're basically getting is American funds, and then you're going to pay a fee to have them kind of oversee your American funds, and you can call American funds and get the exact same thing. So without the fee. But it's this idea of people, and I'm going to say kind of, I'm going to put people in three different categories. I'm going to put people in kind of common income, uncommon income, and then ultra wealthy. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of just making this up as I go, but this is just from my experience, what I see. And I think there's different strategies for those different levels or those different pools of people. But the people that are in that lower one, let's talk about that first. They're told to put their money in a 401k, put their money in mutual funds, dollar cost average, buy and hold. They don't really know what's going on in their investments. They watch the S&P and they watch the Dow, but they don't really know what that means. And so talk about the pitfalls or some of the things that really aren't happening but that people think are happening there.
Yeah, sure. I think the problem is, unfortunately, those folks at the bottom don't really get much guidance. I have a 401k at Rutgers, and fortunately, I have a pretty extensive background in finance, so I can figure it out. But there's literally nobody that I could pick up the phone and chat with and say, hey, is this better than another thing? So that's really the challenge that they're up against. You know, my advice always is, the 401k IRA, that's really more of like a backup plan. It's happening for you regardless, so you don't even have to think about it. It's like a set it and forget it. But obviously with inflation and, you know, just life in general, everything's more expensive. College is more expensive. Living expenses are more. So the idea that you're going to save today's dollars and they're going to be able to support you for tomorrow is not really super clear. So what I always recommend is use the 401k and your IRA, max that out. But you really have to focus outside of that if you want to be 100% secure. And that brings us to those other two levels that you discussed. And the interesting thing is that top level, very little of their money is actually invested in the stock market. Most of it is businesses, private assets, and real estate.
And so, you know, it's funny because I think that there's a lot of people, you know, I have a client, his first name is Joseph, and he makes millions of dollars a year doing his own trading in Wall Street, right? And I remember, and he's a big infinite banking advocate. He does a lot of infinite banking. He's taking the profits from his Wall Street stuff, doing that, and buying assets, buying businesses. Well, he's buying assets. I don't know if he's buying businesses, but regardless, he knows how to make money in Wall Street, right?
Yes.
And so I always think it's interesting because he takes that money and instead of putting it back in Wall Street, he's putting it in these other things, but he's figured it out. And I think that's where the bottom two levels, like the bottom level definitely doesn't have it figured out.
Right.
The middle level, the bottom of that doesn't have it figured out, but the top of it sometimes does. Right.
Yes.
But it's very rare.
True.
And then what I see and when, you know, the people that I know and probably the wealthiest person that I know, you know, and I know what they're doing in their finances is maybe around 4 or 5 billion. And I consider that a lot of money, Ken. I don't know about you, but that person, they have cash and then they have assets. You know, they don't have like businesses and real estate and they don't put any money really at risk. In fact, there was a guy that was managing this person's money. Like he said, he was his investment person, right? Obviously internal only client, but the guy retired early. And I thought, wait a minute, all you're doing is putting this person's money in cash. I mean, how much are you, I mean, and, oh, well, he's paying me a salary plus this and this and this. And I'm like, good deal for you. I mean, you know, hey, cash is this.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Talk about these people come out of college and they've got the master's degree mostly.
So master's of business administration, MBA, but like most of them. So like an MBA, you know, you're basically spending probably $250,000 a year or more when you include all the costs and the opportunity costs. So, you know, you're spending $250,000, $300,000 over the course of a couple of years, and you're also not making money over that time frame. So when people get that degree, they don't realize it's actually a swing of like $400,000 or $500,000, depending on what they're making. But when they come out, obviously their thinking is very institutionalized. And, you know, one of the challenges is it's fact. Over a 10-year time frame, 98% of professional money managers underperform the market. So this is why the recommendation is always, you know, dollar cost average into the S&P 500. And I think there's a part of that that definitely makes sense. But I think what you are getting at with like super wealthy people, what's interesting is there have been money studies that have been done over the years, and people who don't have money take outsized risks. So they take risks that they can't afford to take. So they have a massive ability to take risk, a massive willingness to take risk, but very little ability. And it inverts once you get wealth. So those individuals have a massive ability to take risk, but very little willingness. And what's interesting is statistics also show family offices, you know, people that are like centimillionaires and above, the average return that they make is 7%. Right. And that's not that big of a return. And you know, from real estate and businesses and all the things that we've discussed, you know, 7%, really, that's it. But they're focused on the actual amount, the dollar amount that they're making, not the return. So if 7% equates to $20 million, it's $20 million. It's the volume or the velocity.
Yeah. So you just said two words that I like is in the way that I describe what you said is exactly what you said, volume and velocity. Right. And so talk about velocity, because I don't, you know, sometimes we talk about that with infinite banking, but I want you to talk about it just from a financial term standpoint.
Sure, absolutely.
Because people think, when you think of velocity, people think of like the scientific term, and that's not what we're talking about.
Right, right. So when you think about it, right, there's certain investments where you invest, like a venture capital investment, like Shark Tank. You know, they're making an investment and it's either going to work out really, really well or not going to work out at all. So that's like very little velocity. Velocity, we're talking similarly to like physics, speed. So you would rather have something that we're spitting off consistent cash flow, even if it was less cash flow, but you're getting that money back quickly to deploy it. So if you just think about it, if you were getting monthly cash flow versus annual cash flow, even if it was the same amount of money, monthly would be preferred because you have that money back to deploy again. And to your point with the infinite banking concept, you know, that's something that is a phenomenal piece of it. So you're getting your money faster and you're putting it back into the bank. And then you try to redeploy it as quickly as possible. So it's really that speed aspect of it, rather than throw money in a nest egg and then one day you open up your portfolio and you just hope it's much, much larger than when you started, you know?
So, you know, a couple of things that makes me think, because I tell people, Ken, when they're newer to infinite banking, is I say, you know, when you go out and you buy these assets, the money flows back in, then you redeploy it, and the money flows back in. And your biggest problem is going to be the money flows in too fast. It won't fit in the policy.
Yep.
And they shake their heads and they say, yep, they understand. But I don't know that they believe me. Right. And then it happens. Right. So I'll give you an example. And maybe we talked about this, but I have a client who is in the trailer business, and you can buy a $100,000 trailer and he can lease it out for 36 to 48 grand, right? Nice. Per year. Now, on a monthly basis.
Wow.
Okay. So if he had 100 of them, right? And when those payments came in every month, what would he do if he was smart? Buy more trailers.
Right. Right. Of course.
And to me, it's like, and I want to get into this in a minute, but it's like, when we want something that somebody else has, what do? We'll do what they do, right? Yeah. So if we think about how a bank works, we want to act like a bank. Well, what does a bank do? So let's talk about velocity and volume, right?
Sure.
So a bank says, they take my mortgage payment, you know, I have a mortgage, you have a mortgage, all these other people have a mortgage. So when we make our monthly payment, they pool it all together and lend it out to somebody else, right?
Yep.
And they do that over and over again, creating velocity, turning their money faster and faster and faster. All businesses, every business in the world, doesn't matter what it is, operates on turns.
Yes.
Right? The more turns, absolutely, the more velocity.
Sure.
And it's funny because all these businesses like retail or whatever, somebody goes, man, they have 30, 40% off. I'm like, yeah, don't feel sorry for them. They're turning that stuff so fast.
Yeah.
And they're making a lot of money. Right. It's not 50% markup or 100% markup. That's not, it's the turns. And so what are the people going into Wall Street? What is the one thing that they're not being educated on that is like, what is your like biggest, not frustration, but the thing that you go, man, I can't believe that you're not being taught that when you're paying $250,000 a year for a MBA program?
Yeah, the sad and scary thing is personal finance. And I think the unfortunate aspect of it is the mindset is you're going to be making so much money, it won't even matter. And I think about that and it just scares/fascinates me. And when I was working in investment banking, I was just fascinated how these people were like gluttons for punishment, willing to work 7 days a week, 100 hours a week. So I was curious and I started asking them, you know, people that I respected that went to these Ivy League schools, got these MBAs, and I would say, why are you doing this? You're like super smart. Why don't you start your own business? Why don't you do something else? And the response was always the same. You know, my significant other, whomever, like nice things, like living on the Upper West Side, like going to the Hamptons. So basically they're effectively spending everything that they're making. So they need, quote unquote, the job. They're living like at or beyond their means. So this isn't limited to the person that's like making minimum wage. This is like the best and brightest of Wall Street, and they just don't understand it and they don't get it. And it's not really taught in school. And this is not, you know, like some secret. It's a fact. Like, we do not teach personal finance. I work at a business school. We do not teach personal finance. It's not part of the curriculum at all whatsoever. There's not a class that you could take. And we've actually discussed it for years. Like, you know what? We should have a course on basic personal finance, like blocking and tackling, balancing a checkbook, stuff like that. And I know there are some high schools that have that. But that's probably the biggest misnomer, is that people that come into finance understand how to invest and, you know, how to invest for their future. And the vast majority do not. Most of them have the mindset like, I don't even need to contribute to a 401k because I'm going to make so much money, it won't even matter. And that to me is very scary, because I kind of look at the 401k and the IRA, like I mentioned earlier, more or less an insurance policy. It's kind of like, hey, everything else doesn't work out, you still have that to fall back on. But if you're really smart about managing your money, I mean, I wish, you know, investment, the infinite banking concepts were taught, you know, that would be phenomenal for people to learn, because it doesn't matter what your age is, it doesn't matter what your income strata is. And it's something that you can utilize powerfully. And I mean, you know, way more success stories than I do. And I think that's the thing, you know, on Wall Street, it's always like, yeah, I got a guy, I got a guy. It's like a Jersey thing too. I got a guy. And the problem with is they might not be the best person to allocate your funds. You know, I always think to myself, if I want to become a decamillionaire, is the person that's advising me, are they a decamillionaire? And when the answer is no, and they're not even like a millionaire, then I start to say, wait a second, you're telling me to do stuff that hasn't proven true in your own life. Now I'm kind of suspect. Now it's like, I want to see what your net worth is when you advise me, because if you're further down the path, then I could say, oh, okay, you know, I trust your judgment. So that's why, like, people take advice from Warren Buffett, right? He's a centibillionaire, right? I think he's figured it out by now. But the average, you know, Joe and Jane that's on the internet, it's kind of scary that people are listening to these folks. But the scary part is these, like, masters of the financial universe are very clueless when it comes to personal finance. Scary.
Well, they can be, right? At some point they can be, but to your point, you know, it's funny, my life kind of changed when I started buying companies. I started doing this stuff.
Yep.
And I thought, I really just at the end of the year know what is coming in and what's going out. And I look at my tax return. I look at the P&Ls from the different companies. And so what I decided is I hired one person to just do a personal P&L every month. And she gathers all the stuff from all the different companies and puts it on a balance sheet of, you know, here's your P&L personally for the month. And, you know, thankfully, I'm in a position where it always looks good. It's just a matter of how good it looks.
Yeah.
And I never, ever spend anywhere near as much as that comes in, to your point before, is, you know, when I tell people that I don't really focus on money anymore because my lifestyle is not that fancy, right? I mean, I have a nice country club. I drive the car I want. I live in a house that I want. It's like, I know how much money I can spend and I can't spend. And I'm still so frugal in some things, like flying private. You know, if we got eight guys going, I'm in. If it's like three of us and it's, you know, 30 grand a piece, I'm like, I don't want to do that. But okay, so we talked about that lower group and, you know, what they should do and is do the common things. I mean, you know, if your income is common, you don't want to do uncommon strategies because you might get burned, right? But if your income is uncommon, like that middle group for now, right? And let's call that, you know, a couple hundred thousand to a few million dollars a year, right?
Sure.
I mean, you're not ultra wealthy. I know that some people, that sounds really ultra wealthy, but I'm just telling you, in the big scheme of things, it's not, right?
And agreed.
So what would you recommend for those people?
Yeah, so I would say for those individuals, I'm a huge fan of real estate as an asset class. And that is one of, honestly, the best overall from a returns perspective, a taxation perspective. You have depreciation to shield your income. You have appreciation, which is going to happen just by, you know, its very nature. It's just a phenomenal asset that everyone can relate to. I think that's the other aspect of real estate, is everyone can relate to it. It's not the same as breaking down a company, understanding a business, crypto, all of this stuff. So I think that next tier, that is really the pathway. You know, you want to kind of move away from public markets and try to focus on private. And that's where real estate comes in. So if I'm investing in real estate on Wall Street through a REIT, a real estate investment trust, that's going to move up and down every single day. But when you buy a property, the price or the value of that doesn't change up and down every single day. In fact, there's obvious liquidity issues with that, because if you wanted to sell it right away, you couldn't. You'd have to take a massive discount. But that's really the value that the public market gives you. So I would say that next tier, that's where I would focus my time, effort, and attention, assuming that they're still working. Real estate is something that they can do on the side and build a nice portfolio, and it's not going to acquire a ton of time, effort, and attention. I'm also a big fan of, you know, cash flowing businesses to the extent you have the time. Like, I previously owned a laundromat and a pizzeria. I think a laundromat, self-service car wash, any of those cash businesses are feasible that a person could have a regular job and then also manage those as well. But you have to have a plan in place. You have to say, I'm going to get 10 of these so that I could replace my income and then focus on this, you know, full time. But if you're just like, I'm going to work until I retire and then do this on the side, that's when I would say, you know what, avoid the businesses and focus more so on real estate at that point.
So, you know, I love that because I think that the audience and most of us are in that, are either in that middle category or want to be in that middle category, right? Sure. And so the thing that I see is that people get into that sector, like real estate, buying businesses, and they don't really know what to do. And it's where, you know, you're an educator, right? You're a professor. It's where, it's how do you learn anything? Well, like your students, again, I wasn't a great student, Ken, so I'm probably, maybe this isn't how it works, but you know, you go in, you're supposed to have some reading done before the lecture, right? So you study, you read a book. And then you go and you listen to the person that knows the material better than you, explain the book to you, the material in the book, and then you ask questions, and then they give you an assignment kind of as proof of concept that you understand the material that you read, that I explained, that you asked questions about. Now prove it to me that you understand it either through a quiz, test, or project, right?
Yeah.
Is that fairly accurate?
That's so how most education
is. Why would you think, how is that how your education is?
So actually, it's not. That's why I was smiling as you were telling me that. So I actually, and it fascinates me that, you know, the students get like blown away by this. I don't teach from a book. So when you show up to my class, you don't have to buy a textbook. We literally start with a blank Microsoft Excel spreadsheet and we build a financial model from scratch. And the cool part is I teach in the MBA program as well as the undergrad program. And the MBA program, I do have a lot of alternate route folks, people who are teachers, musicians, you know, et cetera, that don't have any finance background whatsoever. And I teach them everything that they need to know, finance, accounting, Excel, corporate finance. And that I think is so valuable because you're learning as you go. And I'm teaching everybody based on how we all learn. So it's not the typical memorize, regurgitate for a test, which is multiple choice, because that's not applicable to the real world. So I actually hate that type of teaching. You know, there are classes I've taught in the past where I have to stick to a curriculum and stuff like that. But the classes that I teach, financial modeling, I literally build it from scratch. It's like we're building a house. We show up. There's nails. There's 2x4s. There's bags of concrete. And it's like, all right, we're going to build a colonial. Everybody, you know, get your gloves on. Let's rock. So I think that's much better because when you actually build it physically by hand and you ask the questions along the way, I mean, imagine if you were creating a book over the course of a semester of what you're going to learn, that's essentially what we're doing. We're building it as we go. And I find that to be way more effective. And I've had students say like, I've learned more in this class than my entire MBA, than my entire undergrad. And it's kind of like a mini MBA in and of itself as a result of that, because I have to be able to field any question that anybody has, whether it's, you know, the management of the company, how they allocate the capital, et cetera.
You know what I love about that, Ken, is you know why most people don't teach like that?
Tell me.
It's because they can't. Yeah. They can't do it. And so they can't build the colonial. And they know they're going to get a question they can't answer.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like when I teach people in the banking, and you've seen this, I just start drawing stuff out.
Yep.
It might be the same thing that I've drawn a million times, but I listen to what the person's doing and then I try to customize it a little bit for them. But I build out the system. That's why I was smiling when you were saying that is I build out like an example of how we would build an infinite banking system. How are we going to build yours? I don't know. But you like, okay, hey, we're going to build a colonial. We're going to build a contemporary. I can do either one. But you decide which way we're going to go with this and just know I'll be able to coach you along the way. And in personal finance, I believe, and I think, and IBC is part of personal finance, is You got to, you know, I can't do it for you.
Right.
Right. You got to build the spreadsheet. You got to build the system. I'm going to be there to help you to answer questions. And hey, do I use this beam or that beam, or where's the weight bearing? You know, like if we're building a house.
Absolutely.
And I'll make sure we don't make any massive mistakes like that. But you got to decide where we're going with it. What it's going to look like in the end and how big it's going to be. Right. Yep. I mean, I don't decide that. So I love the way that you teach. And I was always a terrible student because I couldn't sit there for an hour and learn 10 minutes of information. Like,
right.
Give me the 10 minutes of information. I'll learn it. I'll ask questions. I'll do it. And then let me leave.
Yeah.
You know, and like not an hour and just so I was always bored to death, but I do love to learn, and I love to learn from people who know what they're talking about. So, you know, again, I see a lot of marketers, and you see this because, and we're going to talk about this, but you have a YouTube channel and you have social media outlets and information where you're teaching people about this information, right? Basically for free.
Yes.
Right. I mean, they can get a lot of information for free and they can engage you other ways. But I love that you can learn anything that you wanted to learn. If I want to learn about the golf swing and I know nothing about the golf swing, I can build a pretty decent golf swing from YouTube.
Sure. Absolutely.
Now, if I want to take it to the next level and I want to be a scratch player, well, now I got to pay somebody to help fine tune me, to show me where I'm not doing it the way that a professional golfer would do it. And so I love where we're at in the world that in learning, and I'm really passionate about it because we've brought up a couple things, and I don't mean to, you know, by the way, like when Ken and I talked about this show, audience, this is not where we were going to go. So maybe we'll do another show and we'll go where we said we were going to go. But as I get to know somebody and just talk to somebody, it's like where my brain thinks about, but I think about, you've said a couple of things is the kind of common, kind of the lower income person. And again, we all started there. Okay.
Yep.
So like, if that's where you're at, I'm not criticizing you.
Nope.
I'm trying to help you understand where you're going. You could, if I'm saying, look, if you just stay there, then do 401ks, your goal is retirement. Cause I'm sure you don't like what you're doing or you wouldn't be making a common wage, but your goal is someday stop doing what you're doing. Right. I'm 58 years old. My goal is to never stop what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so retirement is not in my vocabulary. Cash flow is because I mean, I got two meetings today and then I'm going to go play golf.
You know,
so I think I call it work, but I'm not sure that it is, right? And I get to talk to people like you, and whether it's in a podcast or talk to people about infinite banking or freedom or wealth building or whatever it is. And I love doing that. I mean, and so talk about where that kind of changes, like to financial independence, financial freedom. Are the students, I mean, talk about that. And then are the students that are coming in, is that even on their radar, that financial independence, freedom, you know, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think especially this younger generation, it very much is on their brain. I think the challenge, though, is they're very impatient. So what I always recommend is whatever you're doing, master it. And it's going to take probably 2 years. And that's why analyst programs on Wall Street are typically 2 years long, because you want to know everything there is to know so that when you go to the next thing, you're like, yeah, I mastered that. I'm ready for this next thing. And I'm always, always talking about financial freedom, empowerment, and how they can do that. My biggest concern is not going so fast that you don't have the proper foundation, because when you start tacking things on top, it could crumble. So that's the thing that I always focus on. But I'm a huge fan of building wealth through working on Wall Street and then getting that optionality. And that's what I always tell my students. You know, I had a case, two students 2 years ago graduated. They reached out to me after they started working, both in investment banking. And they started asking me about hedge funds and private equity. They're 2 months into their job. I'm like, guys, why are you asking me about this stuff? And they said, we're already getting recruited for those jobs that we're going to be looking for 2 years from now. So I gave them advice. Long story short, one got a job at a hedge fund, one got a job private equity, and 350 to 400,000 for those jobs. And the jobs they were currently working at, 150,000. You don't have to be a mathematician. 150, 150, that's 300. 350, 350, that's 700. That's $1 million in the first 4 years of work. And other than athletes and celebrities, I don't know where you can make that level of capital anywhere in the world. That's why I'm a huge fan of my company, The Road to Wall Street. That's what I focus on, empowering people to get access to and get jobs on Wall Street. You don't need an Ivy League degree. You don't need a network, a pedigree. I could teach you all that stuff. But that I think is incredible, because if you focus your career working on Wall Street, just from an hour's perspective, you're pretty much working like double what the average person does. And typically they literally will push you out to retire in your early 40s. And that's just the reality. Right. So at that point you have, you know, 10, 15, 20 million bucks saved. And now it's like, what do I do? But that I think is a great unlock for people and an area of opportunity that I like to focus on. So what I teach on YouTube, for example, or Instagram is those skills. Like, what do people do on Wall Street? What do people know on Wall Street? So I'm giving people direct access to that. And the funny thing to me is we have such like a wide gap. You have kids that are like 18 years old teaching about finance and they don't know anything, but they have a huge following and they're like charlatans. Then you have the other extreme, the people that do know stuff, let's say they're like PhDs or experts, what have you, they don't have like the Wall Street experience. So I'm kind of like this right in between, where I have the Wall Street experience and I have the credibility and I'm trying to deliver it to folks. I'm just in the process of building that audience. And the funny thing is people say, well, wait a second, you know, you talk about these millions of dollars on Wall Street. And I say, the people that know what I know are making 7 to 8 figures a year. They would never waste their time trying to build out YouTube, what have you. Like, I purposefully left Wall Street over a decade ago to do my own thing. So it's like I have that experience and that exposure that I can deliver to folks. And the big thing that I would say to people is everybody gets really scared, like Wall Street numbers, all this stuff. It's literally like algebra. Like, that's the highest level of math you need. If you could pass like middle school math, that's as hard as it really gets on Wall Street. But people psych themselves out. It's way simpler than people realize. So what I'm trying to do is empower folks to recognize like, hey, I didn't go to an Ivy League school. I went to a state school. My dad was a teacher. My mom was a registered nurse, grew up lower middle class. But that doesn't mean that you can't get access to that world and learn the things that they know to empower yourself and build wealth and live a life of your dreams. Because think about it, Jim, would you sign up for, hey, go to school, get a job, work 50 years, retire, die? That's not a life that I want to live. That's not something I'm signing up for.
No. Yeah. By the way, that's what we were sold back in my day. It was, you know, get a job, work harder than everybody else, and then live below your means, save your money and put it into Wall Street and leave it there for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, like you said. And then you pivot it to distribution and then you hope that you don't run out of money.
Hope.
And, exactly. And yeah, hope, right? And hope is not a strategy, right? No. So what we, you know, even a financial planner with most people, you know, you're sitting there, I'm making guesses, they're making guesses. And then we hold hands and hope together that our guesses are somewhere close. And we check it every year, every 6 months, whatever it is. That's all like just total BS. Because then you have like somebody who has no education.
Yep.
And they just go out and they buy a motel and they run it. And then they buy another motel and they run that. And then they get somebody to run the 4 motels that they own and they go buy a bank or something. And then all of a sudden that person's 35 years old and has all the cash flow they're ever going to need. And they think, well, what happened? What'd you do? And then, you know, like, oh, while you were in school paying 250 grand a year, I was doing this. By the way, I'm not advocating that because I think education is really important.
True.
But it's functional education. It's education that you can use, right? And so I think that, you know, Robert Kiyosaki always says that someday they're going to look back and think that it was barbaric that we would make kids sit in a classroom for 8 hours a day and teach them, you know, and force them to learn the way that we're forcing kids to learn. And quite frankly, for a lot of kids, it's not working. So I'm not saying you don't need to know that, like algebra.
Yep.
How long would it take me on YouTube to learn algebra if I don't know anything about algebra?
Hours.
I mean,
at most
a couple hours. I don't
know. Not a full year. Like, not a full year. That's
not long,
sure.
Right?
No,
not a full year. Right. No. Exactly. Yeah. To my point, maybe a week. I mean, after a week, I would have the basic concepts down easily.
Definitely.
Right. Depending on how much time. So, you know, again, it's kind of goals and focus. And I see the same thing that you're saying with young people.
Yeah.
Is they're not signing up for the, hey, I'm going to go work this. Hey, I'll work 100 hours a week. Right. but it better be, that better accelerate my wealth. Like that, correct. If I'm making $1 million a year on Wall Street because I'm kicking ass,
yeah.
Well, and I live on $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to your point, after a few years, I've got a lot of money to put into play.
Yeah.
And if I leverage, and you know what? I'm paying my bills. I'm doing all this stuff. So the bank loves me. I can go leverage the bank's money or the seller's money. I can go buy some real estate. But I've seen people go from nothing with good educations, nothing really, just a hard job, to financially independent in 5 years or less.
Sure.
And I'm not saying they weren't exceptional, by the way, but also those people, a lot of those people will share with you what they did.
Exactly.
And they have YouTube channels and they have, and it, if you're not spending some of your time learning stuff on YouTube, then you're making a mistake. But I like the charlatan comment because it's frustrating with infinite banking too, because there are guys out there that are really good marketers.
Yeah.
And they know nothing about long-term how to use infinite banking. They're still talking about pay off your cars and blah, 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 and all this crap.
Yep.
And RPUing the policy, right?
Yeah.
They don't even realize if you RPU a bunch of policies, which that's called reduced paid up. You're like, hey, these are good. I'm not going to, the insurance company will terminate that person. They don't like RPU.
Yeah.
They don't like when you stop paying that and you reduce the risk and all that. And it messes up their reinsurance treaties too, because there's a certain amount at risk that they have to transfer to the reinsurance companies per the treaty. But there's people out there, after 10 years, you RPU the policy because you don't need the death benefit, blah, 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 blah. Why would I ever want to do that? I mean, I'm not paying the premiums anyway. My tenants, my customers are paying the premiums, not me.
That's the key.
And so that's the key, right? And I need some place to hold my money. Why wouldn't I hold it something I control rather than something somebody else controls?
Amen.
And it's interesting what you said, because, you know, I started my career off in kind of the, on the street of Wall Street, meaning out there building a financial planning practice, which I knew nothing about. And, you know, the way that it works, and you already know this, Ken, is, you know, somebody from some fund or money platform, Brinker Capital, whatever it was back in the day, they would come in and teach us something. And then an hour later, we're out telling our clients about it, right? we just learned it an hour ago.
Yeah, lots of due diligence.
As long as you're halfway intelligent, you can say whatever the person just said to you.
Sure.
You can just kind of repeat it, right? And then back then, we're charging 1% management fee. And I mean, that we get to keep. And, you know, I had $700 million under management. I mean, it's like, it's not a bad job, right? But it wasn't how people were really getting wealthy.
True.
And so that's where I switched to, like, hey, these business owners, everybody that was in my clientele, it was the two things that you said, all the people that were really wealthy. When I say really wealthy back then, I'm just going to say $20 million and up, right?
Yep.
It was probably maybe a little bit higher than that, but it was all real estate and businesses.
Yep.
Period. Yeah? And, and so you go to the nicest country clubs in Naples and you hear there's three people. Now there's three people here in that. There's people, business owners.
Yep.
And when I say business owners, there's a few, and I'm going to throw these guys out. There's a few executives, like they were just the top executive, like at Kroger or something like that.
Oh yeah.
But it's business owners, real estate investors. And the third one is Wall Street workers, right?
Yeah.
Hedge fund managers. And they're the youngest ones in the country club.
Hot shots.
Because they got out in their 40s. And it's so funny that you say that. So, you know, again, the experts always tell me how long this thing should go. And it's gone longer. And I feel like we've just scratched the surface, honestly.
True.
I think it feels like to me, we're just starting the conversation. But for the audience, because I think what you offer and why I was excited to have you on the show, Ken, is that you offer a totally different perspective. Because you know, I don't want to say you know everything there is to know about Wall Street, but you know more than 99.9% of people out there about Wall Street.
Yep.
Plus you have the education to back it up. Plus you are the professor at Rutgers, taking all of that into consideration. And then you have this perspective that is, hey, ultimately you should buy real estate businesses. And what I really loved, and you already know this, is when we talked about infinite banking, because you got all the stuff that I would normally teach somebody about velocity and leverage and all of these things. You already knew all of that. So those were very quick conversations. And it was like, okay, let's move on to the next thing. And it was like 15 minutes in, I think you probably learned infinite banking or kind of like answered your questions or the barriers faster than anybody that I've ever seen. faster than PhDs in economics that I've seen because they fight it, right?
Right.
And you were just like, boom, I got it. And so I was like, we got to get you on the show and we're going to have you back because
absolutely.
I think we could dive into some of these things. But Ken, I want the audience and I want our community. And that's another thing that for everybody that is in the community, the Create Tailwind community, I'm going to convince Ken to put together a course to give you the basics and some or courses kind of help you learn this stuff. And as a member, like, because I am so passionate about the things that we don't learn. We only get maybe 100 years on this earth.
Yep.
And we waste so much time with the things that are wrong. You know, we think like, you know, like you could just live your whole life and then go, oh, that was wrong. What I was taught was wrong.
It's a survival mechanism. That's what it is. It's a survival mechanism. Think about the news. Is the news talking about the latest, you know, millionaire and billionaire? Like, hey, Joe over here became a millionaire today. No, it's this person got raped, robbed, murdered, what have you. So it's that fear. And people don't realize it. That fear has kept us alive, right? For all the time that we've been on Earth as a species, but that's not helpful. It's not advantageous. And when people die, like palliative care doctors always ask questions and say, hey, if you could do something differently. And the answers are always the same. I wish I would have taken more risks. I wish I wasn't so afraid. And it's like, you only get one chance. So why not, you know, do your best and learn as much as possible from people like Jim, if you want to learn about like Wall Street stuff, people like myself. And the world is so open to us connecting and, you know, getting this knowledge and getting this information. I think it's a travesty that more people don't try to. They just kind of go through the day to day. And then you wake up one day and it's like, where'd the last 20 years go? So I would say don't live life passively, live it actively. I mean, we talk about stuff like this all the time.
Okay, I love it. And you know, I still never made my point about the charlatan thing other than the IBC, but I'll give you the charlatan idea. And this is, then I'm going to wrap this up, but this is how I would compare Ken to the other people out there that are teaching you about these things. Is there's Peter Attai wrote a book called Outlive, the Science and Art of Longevity, right?
Yeah, huge fan.
He's a PhD, but he's also, I'm pretty sure he's an MD.
He's not a medical doctor.
PhD. He's an MD.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was a cardio surgeon of some sort, right? I'm not going to try to like
cardiothoracic.
I don't know if it was cardiothoracic. I don't know what the hell it was. It was some kind of cardio doctor and very well educated and at Johns Hopkins and all of this stuff, right? And then said, wait a minute, you could die fast. And that's what he's seeing at Johns Hopkins because it's in Baltimore and all these people are killing each other on the streets, these young people. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, or you can die slow. And dying slow means you're going to go eat at McDonald's or processed foods and all this. And it's like, here's what's going to happen to you. And he wrote this book. So what he did is he said, hey, all this stuff that you're hearing, this isn't really true. This is what you're getting from your doctor and everything else. They're just treating you after you've already done the mistakes.
Yep.
But this is how you avoid that. Right. And so he's saying, I was trained how to do this. So it's kind of like, that's kind of how I feel about Ken. Is Ken has all this Wall Street knowledge and then is telling you, okay, do this. Okay, like you said, your insurance, your safety net. And if you're common, and again, do that. Dollar cost average into the S&P 500. Simple.
Yep.
Don't pay somebody a fee. Don't pay a Morgan Stanley guy, sorry, Rich, to do that. Okay? Just do that, right? You can do that. But here's the other way to really make money. So I see you kind of as the financial Peter Attai, which I really love Peter. I'm going to have him on the show someday if he'll come on. But awesome. Now that we've gone way over where I said we would go, so I appreciate your time and patience.
All good.
All right. So I got two last questions for you. First question, what's the best advice anybody's ever given you?
Best advice anybody's ever given me is find out who is where you want to be or has what you want and get the information from them. Don't try to figure it out on your own. Learn from others that are where you want to be, and you'll get the best advice possible, and you'll basically accelerate your success as a result.
Totally agree with that. Totally agree with that. By the way, if I had to say over the years of doing this podcast, that sentiment, everybody's expressed it maybe a little bit differently, is the number one thing for people that are successful.
Sure.
Which is, again, I loved your point with that with Wall Street, right?
Yeah.
When somebody says, hey, my CPA says infinite banking doesn't work, or my CPA says I shouldn't do infinite banking, I'll say, is your CPA wealthy? They go, I don't know. Well, why would you hire somebody to be your CPA that wasn't wealthy? If you are wealthy, you don't want your CPA to be some broke person, right? And of course, a broke person doesn't understand wealth building.
No.
I mean, because they didn't do it. So, all right. I'm not going to get back. I'm not diving back in the pool yet. So if God came down from heaven and only allowed you to retain the knowledge of one book that you've read, what would that book be?
That's easy. The Bible. B-I-B-L-E. Basic instructions before leaving Earth. It's crazy. I've probably read the Bible cover to cover over a dozen times.
I love that.
I have the Bible app. I listen to it every morning. And it really is a living, breathing book. I re-listen to stuff. I'm like, wait, I never heard that before. Because it changes your perspective and your perception changes over time. And that's the thing. So even if you are not a religious person, just for knowledge, phenomenal, absolutely incredible.
So, you know, what I love about that is one thing that I've realized is that every personal development book out there, whatever they're advocating is from the Bible.
Yes.
Every single one.
Yep.
Every single one. How we wrap this show up, The Strangest Secret, right?
Yep.
Is whatever you think about, you'll become. And the Bible says that over and over again. But I used to ask that question and I would say, other than the Bible, right? But then I started thinking, well, why would I say that? Mm. So the YouVersion app, we do a devotional, Nick Costco and I, and there's 15, 20 guys do it every morning.
Awesome.
It's almost like a competition of who's the first person to read it, because you're supposed to do it. I mean, the Bible says you pray and you study the Bible first thing in the morning. Jesus went and prayed in the dark, right?
Amen.
You know, it's like, 5 a.m. Or you could see when somebody's not sleeping. Well, that person, they did their devotional at 3:30 in the morning. The guys that do it at like 9 o'clock in the morning, sometimes I don't see their comments but we have all these people and then they make comments. And you're exactly right. Every day, and there's a guy on there and he's been on the show. I actually don't know if that's been released yet. But he's either been on the show or he's going to be on the show. Anthony Thompson is his name. And he takes, we just did Jocko Willink's book, Relentless. No.
Extreme Ownership.
No, that's Tim Grover.
Extreme Ownership. Yeah, I love that one.
He took that book and then he relates it to the Bible.
Yep.
And he'll say, in the Bible, it says this. In the book, Jocko says this. And this is how it relates to our spiritual walk, right?
Yeah.
And I love that he does that. And I always look to see when I'm picking a new devotional or if it's my turn to pick out of the group, I look for him to see if he has any new ones. He's constantly coming out with new ones. All right. Now we're way over, but again, that just spurred me to,
I love it.
To think about that. All right, Ken. So I'm going to put all of this stuff in the show notes, but I want you to tell people how to find you for people that are just driving that are going to use Siri or something to say, hey, search for this.
Sure.
On YouTube, what's your channel?
So it's very easy. Ken Freeman CFA. So everywhere on social media, I'm Ken Freeman CFA. I would say YouTube and Instagram are my primary channels that I focus on. You know, I also have the others like Facebook. I have LinkedIn. But if you search Ken Freeman CFA, any of the social channels, that's how you'll find me. But I would recommend folks go check out YouTube because it's very difficult for me in like a short form reel to teach something in 15 to 30 seconds. But going to YouTube, I have, you know, the bandwidth to teach, you know, 8 to 15 minutes, and you can actually get some tremendous value from there. So yeah, I would reach out via those channels.
Awesome. And then we're definitely going to have Ken back on. I definitely want to have Ken do some stuff in the community, and we can just post some of the stuff that you've already done, or we can break it up into a course, maybe do like a live Q&A after
Absolutely.
We've had that up for a while. So audience, thank you for hanging in there with us for as long as this podcast has gone. And Ken, thank you so much for your time and sharing the knowledge and just everything that you're doing out there for financial literacy and helping people. And we're going to wrap this up, guys, as we always do with The Strangest Secret. So take it away, Earl.
Here's the key to success and the key to failure. We become what we think about. Now let me say that again. We become what we think about.
Once again, thank you so much for taking the time to hear what was shared on today's podcast. If you are looking to discover new wealth-building strategies, then go to community.createtailwind.com. That's community.createtailwind.com to join our free online community and get access to free courses and in-depth training videos designed to help you build wealth and break away from the herd. Click the link in the show notes to access the community today. Thanks again for listening.